Hello and welcome to Truth News Radio Australia for this Thursday, the 20th of May, 2010. We're launching the show tonight with a new format, a tighter format. We're trying to improve the way we deliver the information on the show, and we've had a few comments, most of them good, but we've had some feedback and we're trying to improve the delivery. So I'm going to be running through the headlines at the beginning of the show in fairly short order, and then we'll be getting guests on at different points during the show for shorter segments. We'll be more focused, and we'll try to stick to the topic and not stray too far away while still giving you the kind of general commentary that you've learned to respect from Truth News. Okay, well, without further ado, let's get into the stories for tonight. First story off the rank, travellers to be searched for porn. Australian customs officers have been given new powers to search incoming travellers' laptops and mobile phones for pornography, a spokeswoman for the Australian sex industry says. Fiona Patten, president of the Australian Sex Party, is demanding an inquiry into why a new question appears on incoming passenger cards asking people if they are carrying pornography. Patten says officials now had an unfettered right to examine travellers' electronic devices, marking the beginning of a new era of official investigation into people's private lives. She questioned whether it was appropriate to search people for legal R18 and X18 plus material. Is it fair that customs officers rummage through someone's luggage and pull out a legal men's magazine or a lesbian journal in front of their children or their mother-in-law, she said. Well, indeed. And this development falls into line with a number of other stories, which we will be bringing you immediately. Fines for refusing to take part in ABS health survey. Up to 50,000 people face fines for refusing to take part in a new ABS survey on Australians' health. The fines will be up to $100 a day if they refuse to divulge information on their health and lifestyle to the Australian Bureau of Statistics researchers. The Australian Health Survey announced in last week's budget that it will be the most comprehensive research on the health of Australians ever undertaken and will be jointly funded by the National Heart Foundation. But the 50,000 people chosen to take part will be compelled to do so. Participants will be weighed and measured and will be asked to give a blood and urine sample. They will also be asked detailed questions on what they drink and eat and their physical activity. The ABS said participation is ultimately compulsory for those who are chosen by random sampling to ensure the survey accurately represents the Australian population as a whole. However, participants would only be compelled to answer questions. Providing a blood and urine sample and weighing in would be voluntary. Well, it's very kind of the of our rulers and masters to give us the option there to opt out on the blood and urine. They're very kind. Next Australian story for the night. DNA debacle, the case of Farah Jama. This is a story that was on the ABC Law Report, and it's very, very important in my opinion. A lesson to everyone. Never put blind faith in science. Thanks to a contaminated DNA test, a young Melbourne man was sentenced to 6 years jail for a rape that in all likelihood never took place. Last week, retired Judge Frank Vincent handed down a damning report which slammed the scientific and legal communities and called for major reforms. Now, an interesting thing, if you listen to the audio of this story from the Law Report, you'll find out that the Victorian police briefly suspended DNA testing, but they did it for like a few weeks and then they resumed it again without ever finding out what the cause of this man's wrongful conviction was, because his conviction was completely based 100% on DNA, which is totally outrageous in itself. But it's legal. You can convict someone simply on the basis of a DNA test. And, of course, if you have total trust in government and total trust in the competence of the laboratories and all the steps in the process, then sure, that'd be a fine way to go about justice. But it's not like that, folks. I mean, injustice occurs for all kinds of reasons, and that's why, you know, convictions based on a single piece of evidence like that are fundamentally ridiculous. Brain cancer linked to mobile phones. A long-awaited international study of the health risks of mobile phones has linked extended use to an increased risk of developing brain tumours. The 10-year Interphone study, the world's biggest study of health effects of mobile phones, found while there was no increased risk of cancer overall, those in the top 10% of phone use are up to 40% more likely to develop glioma, a common type of brain cancer. Just 30 minutes of mobile talk time daily was enough to put participants into the top 10% category in the study, carried out in 13 countries, including Australia, and involved more than 5,000 brain cancer patients worldwide. Now, this story has been reported in a number of different ways in the media. The story I'm quoting you here is actually from news.com.au, which was titled Brain Cancer Link to Mobile Phones. You'll find that most of the other coverage has been very much more limited in what it says. Usually, like, there is no clear link, or, you know, nothing clear, no proof either way, kind of is the way it's being spun. But when you look into the actual detail of the story, you will find that, well, for one, they've classified a heavy mobile phone user as someone who speaks on their phone for more than 30 minutes a day, which is ridiculous, okay? I mean, the average person speaks 30 minutes a day. So, you know, their methodologies there are very worrisome, and they have found at a 40% increase of a certain type of brain tumour in people who use their phone more than 30 minutes a day. Now, I'm not saying that's a huge leap in, you know, figures, but it's there, and, you know, we need to be aware that that this is a danger, and of course it's going to be covered up as much as possible by those who wish to continue to market and sell the technology. But we really need to start rethinking, I think, some of our usage of this type of technology. An Australian price on carbon is inevitable, concludes Hockey. It is inevitable Australia would put a price on its carbon dioxide emissions, the Shadow Treasurer Joe Hockey said amid mixed messages from the Coalition about its approach to climate change. Mr. Hockey would almost certainly have become Liberal leader last November had he renounced his belief that a market mechanism was the best way to reduce carbon emissions. After Tony Abbott won the leadership, the Coalition introduced a direct action climate plan which uses government grants and subsidies to reduce emissions by 5% by 2020, but puts no price on carbon or penalty on polluters. Mr. Abbott has said he would review the policy in 2015, leaving open the possibility he could support a carbon price if other countries did so by that time. But he clearly was implying this was highly unlikely. I am saying that our proposal is a much better way forward than Mr. Rudd's great big new tax, he said in February. I've said many times before that if the whole world changes, we'll change with them, but the world ain't going to change any time fast. Well, let's just deconstruct all that waffle, because he has now said that they would agree, ultimately, with pricing carbon. Mr. Hockey has reconciled his views, and he's looking at the most efficient way of pricing carbon and to meet a legally binding agreement. So this more or less confirms our position on this show, that we, as based on our research, that left and right, Liberal, Labour, it's irrelevant. They're all heading in the same direction. They're just taking different tacks. They're molding public opinion as they go. They will build on movements one way or another to try and get your vote, but then they will steer you back to the direction that they want you to take. Okay, last Australian story that we're going to cover. Privacy watchdog probes Google's Wi-Fi data harvest. The Australian Privacy Commission has launched an investigation into Google's collection of Wi-Fi data following revelations by the company at the weekend that it had mistakenly collected personal data when taking photographs for its Street View mapping service. The company has been scanning the Wi-Fi network alongside the images it takes with its Street View cameras around the country to help location-based services such as Google Maps pinpoint the location of devices such as smartphones. Google said it discovered last week that it had been collecting data from unsecured networks after the Data Protection Authority in Germany asked to audit its Wi-Fi data. Karen Curtis, Australian Privacy Commissioner, said she had met Google representatives on Monday and the company had responded to a series of questions. Now, I'll leave our listeners to investigate the rest of that story. Google is basically claiming that it was all a giant glitch, that they developed some software that was not meant to go live, but they accidentally put it into all their roving vans, and it just picked up all of this information, and then they're promising to delete it. And on the actual Google blog, you can hear them talking about this, and you can read that they've said, we're going to delete it, and we're going to have witnesses there while we push the delete button so you can be sure that we've really deleted it. Well, that's a bit absurd, isn't it? Anyway, if you believe that, I've got a bridge I'm going to sell you. Okay, well, look, we're just going to move on now with the international news, and we'll be joined by Joshua Jackson. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, moving into the international section of the show, welcoming Joshua Jackson back for another evening. Josh, how's your week?
Another fantastic week. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Now, leading with Thailand.
Yeah, well, you know, we've had some people requesting us to talk about Thailand, and I think it's important to talk about because it is regional, it's, you know, I mean, we all know a lot of Thai people over here in Australia, and they're very lovely, lovely folk, generally speaking, and you know, what's happening over there is pretty full on. We're seeing Bangkok anyway, really, really getting hit hard now with a lot of violence, and it's not good for anyone.
I'll second that. Look, I don't know what you've gleaned over the week, but we have had requests on Twitter for us to engage with this. Now, it's actually quite hard to get, I guess, alternative views on the Thai situation. I mean, I really would like for us to discuss more regional news issues on this show. You know, I'd like to talk about what's going on in Indonesia. You know, I'd like to talk about what's going on in New Zealand. I'd like to talk about countries that are nearby. But we need
correspondence.
Yeah, we need to tap in because at the moment, all we can do is give you what's on BBC. You know, or CNN,
wow,
or ABC. You know, but we can only give you the mainstream news sources at present.
We want people on the ground.
We do.
And we sometimes get them, like after the Bali bombings. You know, the fella that made that documentary. He went deep inside to find some info. But anyway, let's talk about Thailand. Look, I mean, from what I can gather, we have a few different power bases in Thailand. You know, you have the Red Shirts. They want the old Prime Minister back. His name was, I can't pronounce it properly, man.
Thaksin Shinawatra?
Yeah. And, You know, he ruled from, I think it was 2001 to 2006 or something like that.
He's a billionaire, by the way.
And he's a very, very rich guy. He's been exiled. Now, he did some good things, apparently. You know, he got rid of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, out of Thailand. It's always a good thing. Apparently gave some debt relief to farmers and stuff like that. Now, then, so you have the red shirts who want this fella back. You have the king of Thailand. You also have the army, which is a big power base in Thailand, traditionally a very political. You know, the army isn't like here. They're quite engaged politically over there. And then you have the current acting prime minister. Now, they all have their different ways of working, but the main thing behind all of this is China, because China really just want order. And for China to see this sort of chaos going on is really... you know, they don't like chaos. They like everyone to be in line.
Look, I'm just going to interject and throw an alternative angle at this. Now, I can't say that my views are based on extensive or in-depth research, but I have been following the news on what's happening in Thailand over the years. And I remember back to the time when Chinawat was the president, the leader, the prime minister, and... what I know was that there was massive issues of corruption, massive issues of his business, basically his business interests totally dominating the country's politics. And there was a huge movement of support from the ordinary people when the military coup occurred that kicked him out of the country. I do know that. There was no violence. There was no... the red shirt phenomena has happened years later as he's in exile and he's been in the UK most of that time. And I just have to point out that there's a whole long sordid history in our world of exiles going to the UK, building up their power and support base with help from bankers and all kinds of elitists, and then going back to their countries and then taking over, right? And it almost always ends up in total tyranny, right? Yeah. And you know, we can look at the Ayatollah Khomeini, you know, who did that from London. We can look at Lenin, you know, after the Russian Revolution. You know, a lot of these people, the UK tends to be an incubator, but this is part of what they call the Great Game. The British Empire started this, and the American Empire is merely a, you know, continuation of that. And I don't think it's even right to call it the British or the American anymore. It's the new globalist empire. They play the great game. They set people up, and they move the pawns on the board, and it's all about consolidating their power. So, and what I would say to you is that Thaksin was, he may have been against the IMF, but he was very pro the war on terror, and it was under his watch that the Americans swooped in and took Hambali from Thailand. And I correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I've got a vivid memory that Hambali, the so-called one of the top people in Al-Qaeda, okay, it might have been Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or it might have been Hambali, but one of them was picked up in Thailand. And they were, you know what they were doing? They were rounding up Muslims and they were massacring them. And you know how they were doing it? They were putting them in trucks and then slamming the door shut, and they were choking them to death. This is what was happening in Thailand during the war on terror.
And what, choking them just by cramming them into
boxes?
Oh,
they'd say it was an accident. You know, we accidentally locked all these people in a truck and they all...
Well, they're still doing that in Afghanistan nowadays.
Right.
They're actually locking, you know, a whole lot of people into shipping containers, cramming them in there and just leaving them for days until they all die.
Yeah, look, it's an amazing technique.
It's just so awful. It is so disgusting. Now, the thing about Thailand is that, you know, I watch the news here, and really nothing ever gets talked about what's actually going on in the background. And that's why, I mean, I admittedly, I should know more about this region, and I will endeavor to do more research on Thailand because it's important. But, you know, when you look at the news, all they go on about is the violence. All they go on about is, oh, look at this person chucking the Molotov, look at these snipers up here. It's like some sort of...
It was exactly the same during the Iran election last year. Yeah. When all we heard was like one woman was killed, and that became this huge story that went on for days and days. And then you understood nothing about the actual political situation.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing about the political situation. And, you know, I was talking to a Thai woman this morning, and I said, you know, what's your take on the situation? And she said, well, you know, I think it's wonderful that the red shirts are able to protest, and it's only 1% who are violent. And it's the violent people that... the violence is very, very evil and terrible, but everybody should be allowed to protest and allowed to be politically active in saying, no, this is wrong or this is right.
Absolutely.
I totally concur.
Yeah, and I'd really like to reach out to our brothers and sisters in Southeast Asia, who many of whom, you know, have that same yearning for freedom that we have. But they've, you know, they've had terrible, you know, they've had to labor under horrendous tyranny. I mean, in Indonesia, that they had a military government there for about 30 years that basically just ruled by the iron fist.
Yeah.
And then they had a brief period of democracy movement there, and then it all kind of went pear shaped again. And they've more or less gone back to the military being in control there, although it's more muted in Indonesia. But that actually coincided with the Bali bombing, you know, and the sort of the collapse of the Indonesian economy that occurred as a result of that, and of course the war on terror becoming a catalyst for the Indonesian military to reassert itself. Which, again, it's part of the power structure. It's part of the power grid. So, you know, we're here. We're a beacon. And we're here on this corner of the planet, you know. And one thing is, we don't have the threat of soldiers coming kicking down our door, which they do in other countries. In many places in Southeast Asia, you wouldn't simply be able to do what we're doing. Because as soon as if it gets well known, the police will find out, and then they could literally come and arrest you. They don't have to. So, you know, we think it's terrible what's going on in Australia on a lot of levels, but we recognise that we have the ability to do this, and I'm not saying we're grateful for it. We're proud of it, you know.
I totally agree with that, Harold. I think I think a lot of people really cherish what people have the ability just to get on and criticise the government. Which a lot of people don't. And I know that China is sort of saying, oh, look at your, you know, your chaotic, the form of government you're holding now is so chaotic, and you're really not keeping stuff together. And I think it's sort of this dig at democracy.
Oh, sure. Yeah. From their point of view, it's like we just allow people too many choices, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we're going to do a more in-depth show for the listeners over the next few weeks as this keeps escalating, or hopefully not escalating.
They're very much
cracking down right now.
Yeah, I do believe that the immediate crisis there is over with the red shirts having surrendered. But then, of course, it could erupt again. Anything could happen.
I'd like to get someone who's more understanding of the in-depth politics behind what's going on there, maybe someone from a university or something who's studied the situation over the years.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, folks, we've got John Bursell, the renowned aircraft engineer, coming on shortly to talk about some really important news, and it's a really special thing that's about to happen for us in Sydney. So
sounds
I'll just
good.
Build the suspense there a little.
I'm suspended.
Yeah, we'll build the suspense. Now, just in the last few minutes here, I wanted to talk a bit about Julian Assange because there's a great interview with him on SBS, and we'll put that on the show notes on Dateline. They went around. Now, Julian Assange.
He's from WikiLeaks fame, by the way, folks.
Yeah, founder of WikiLeaks, an Australian. With a bit of a colourful past, you know, he was convicted of hacking offences in the early 1990s in Melbourne, and he subsequently, you know, and he has a true rebel kind of mission, I think, in life. You know, he rebel in the sense of rebel for freedom. I think, you know, I feel an affinity with what he does to what we're doing on this show.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, I did send him an email hoping that I might be able to contact him, but obviously he probably gets 1,000 emails a day, so there's probably not much chance of that. But if anyone out there does have any contacts there and you'd like to promote the idea of Truth News Radio Australia doing an interview with Julian Assange, I would absolutely, you know, I would die for that, okay? Because it would be great to... okay. A little over the top there. But yes, anyway, I recommend that interview to you. It just discusses the bit of his background and where WikiLeaks is headed. I think WikiLeaks is headed for some big stories coming up. And he says in that interview that they specifically at a certain point decided to start talking to the media. They'd been telling the media to go away for a long time. And then there was a lot of speculation about who they were and, you know, and all this sort of gossip. So he said, okay, we'll just start talking to the media. So that's kind of now what he's doing. He's talking to the media all the time. You know, he's just traveling around.
The media use WikiLeaks like crazy.
Absolutely.
The BBC mainly, their main stories come from WikiLeaks. You see it all the time. Source WikiLeaks.
Absolutely.
It's a fantastic, fantastic source of information and really is what the web excels in doing, is leaking information to the public, which is public information. It should always be, but it's being held for vested interests.
Special purposes. Oh, by the way, there's a story here that I missed in our earlier Australian roundup. This is a really important one. And you'll love this, Josh. Parents pimp kids for swine flu test.
Oh, yeah.
May 16 from the Daily Telegraph, actually. Oddly, we occasionally get some interesting stuff out of the Telegraph amidst all of the, you know, stories of footballers' sexual foibles. We get these kind of stories. Parents are enrolling children as young as 9 months in drug trials in exchange for hundreds of dollars. The cash payments, which could breach national ethical guidelines, will ignite debate over how much should be paid to cover reasonable expenses of trial participants. An industry whistleblower alerted the Sunday Telegraph after some parents were netting $900 by enrolling 3 children at a time into an H1N1 flu vaccine trial. I think when you start offering money, the whole altruistic thing goes out the window, the whistleblower said. You just get parents pimping out their children for a quick buck. Now, you know, I don't know what to be more horrified by, Josh. Where, you know, am I more horrified by the fact that the government and the medical authorities are experimenting on our kids, or am I more horrified by the parents that pimp out their kids for a few hundred dollars?
It's just a big horror show all around, really. I mean, the thing that we have to remember here is that it's that these are little children who don't have a say.
No say at all. Nothing. They have no, it's like they have no rights, you know, and we just decide, you know, well, what are we going to do with them? How many times are we going to jab them today?
Well, the thing is, even if they did have a say, how are they meant to be educated enough to make a reasonable say? So it's, you know, it's a very hard thing to talk about because, of course, in real life, you do need drug trials. You do need trials of certain drugs. If they've developed a new drug, you need to trial it somehow. But for them to hand out, you know, first the government pays everyone to have kids, and now the private sector is paying everyone to inject them with all sorts of strange concoctions. I mean, what's the world coming to?
Look, you know, they give dogs safer vaccines than humans, That may sound ridiculous, but I've got an article here by Dr. Cherie Tenpenny, a very well-known, very highly respected physician in the United States. And the title of the article is Vaccines, Veterinarians Are Better Than Human Doctors. And I highly recommend this article to you. Veterinarians and pediatricians have a great deal in common. Both are highly qualified medical professionals with similar years of education. Both often struggle to determine what is wrong with their patients, since pets, like little people, cannot communicate what hurts. Their jobs are not easy, but the premise of their work is simple. Support the health of those in their care and abide by the oath, first do no harm. Well, you know, get into the article, you'll see what the facts are. They give more vaccines to kids, more vaccines at the same time than they do to dogs, and they, you know, multiple vaccines and vaccines that have mercury in it, and they don't give those same vaccines to dogs. There's things going on that really have to stop, okay? And we'll keep talking about it on this show. We'll keep screaming about it. We won't ever stop. I've got to end that topic right now because we're about to get John Bursell on. So just stand by because we're having an amazing bit of information about to be uncovered. This is a song by Emmylou Harris, Deeper Well.
Sunburned heart, it burned my eyes. Burned so hot, I thought I'd died. Thought I'd died and gone to hell. Looking for the water from a deeper well. I went to the river, but the river was dry. I fell to my knees and I looked to the sky. Looked to the sky and the spring rain fell. I saw the water from a deeper well. Well, looking for the water from a deeper well. Well, looking for the water from a deeper well. For the blood and ready for the honey, ready for the winning, ready for the bill, looking for the water from a deeper well. I found some love and I found some money, found that blood would drip from the honey, found I had a thirst that I could not quell, looking for the water from a deeper well. Well, looking for the water from a deeper well. Well, looking for the water from a deeper well. Well, I did it for kicks and I did it for hate. I did it for lust and I did it for faith. Did it for need and I did it for love. Addiction stayed on tight like a glove. So I ran with the moon and I ran with the night, and the three of us were a terrible sight. Nipple to the bottle, to the gun, to the cell, to the bottom of a hole or a deeper well. Took my trouble down a dead end trail, reaching out a hand for a holier grail. Hey there, mama, did you carry that load? Did you tell your baby by by the bend in the road, by the rebel yell, by the one that fell, looking for the water from a deeper well.
Sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
It's now my pleasure to welcome onto the show the renowned John Bursell.
Nothing welcome, like a bit of canned laughter.
Indeed.
I feel
indeed.
Like I'm in a 60s sitcom.
Now, yeah. just for our newbie
Everybody
listeners.
Loves John.
For our newbie listeners, John Bursell, registered aircraft engineer, leader of the Australian 9/11 Truth Movement, member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and a spokesperson for Truth and Justice on the issue of 9/11, and our leading, you know, expert in the field. Welcome.
Thank you. Big introduction. Maybe not all 100% true, but yeah, I think Dr. Frank Legg would be the leading Australian expert on 9/11. But
indeed.
I like to consider myself an expert in the movement, I suppose, as far as of the movement.
Well, in terms of leadership, I suppose, maybe not leading in the sense of measures, but in terms of being a leader, you kind of hit all the buttons there.
Well, only passion.
Only because no one else gets involved. I don't know, like I keep trying to drop out of this, but it's nearly impossible. And then we've had this great thing that you've got me on this week to talk about a few upcoming events. So I was trying to back off from the 9/11 thing a little bit, have a bit of a rest, and I did have a few months off, but then I get an email from Niels Harrit, Professor Niels Harrit, lead author of the nanothermite paper, and just happens to be coming through Sydney in July.
The most important scientific paper, the most important development in terms of forensically proving that the World Trade Center was actually demolished with explosives, Dr. Niels Harrit, Professor of the University of Copenhagen, coming to Sydney.
And his paper was sponsored by the university there, University of Copenhagen in Denmark. Actually, I've just received an email from Niels, and he's actually going to go into retirement on September 1st. And he's not on good terms with his boss, as we've heard previously from other people, primarily due to his work on 9/11. But anyway, he's as we see with a lot of these academics, they choose towards the end of their careers to do something really important and move forward research into areas that people don't like to go. We know with in the case with Dr. Stephen Jones, he obviously lost his job, but then he received overt and covert support from his university long after he left the university. In the end, they made him an emeritus professor, which means a professor in eternity, which means basically that, you know, he was a really good professor and he deserves to be honoured forever.
Which is a strong statement of support, really.
It is. But then on the other hand, they had to retire him, you know, and so because the political pressure was too great. So we know that the technical scientific people, the people that are looking at the evidence about 9/11, know what's up, and they know that these people are doing great work, but they just can't give any support as far as from the institutional level, because it just brings them too much political heat. You know, they lose funding. They've got Dick Cheney's office ringing up and making all sorts of threats, you know, et cetera. So, you know, obviously Niels is going to go the same way. But imagine what a force he's going to be once he's retired. He'll just be working full-time on 9/11, because this man is excited about this subject. He's just been talking throughout Europe about it. And he's such a clear thinker. Every time I've seen him speak on television, which he's had numerous television performances, won't be drawn on conspiracy theory, sticks to the facts, keeps throwing it back at the journalist, very similar to the manner that we see Jesse Ventura use to great effect. And, you know, this man's a genius.
Now, John, I'd like to throw out a challenge to our listeners. And, you know, we like to do things on this show that really encourage people to get involved. And I'm just shooting from the hip here, but here's the challenge, right? We're going to be producing a press release for the visit here of Dr. Harrit.
17th of July, yep.
And once that press release has been issued, we'll make it available for all of our listeners. And what I'd like you to do is find a representative of the media in your town or wherever you live and hound them. Try to get them to look at the press release. Try to get them to engage with it. Make it a personal mission. I'm saying each person, each listener of this show should make it a personal mission to get a journalist somewhere, even if it's just the editor of your local community rag.
Even better. It's the local ones. It's the local little mini paper, the local messenger paper.
Absolutely. They're actually more likely to even print it. Yeah.
And do it with confidence. Do it with the certainty that you're putting forward something that's been out in the open. It's been published. It's been out there now for well over 12 months. It's uncontested. It's scientific. You know, it's backed by numerous universities. You know, this is real, and people have got to be confident and say, you know, say to these journalists, look, this is real news. This is, you know, this is something that needs to be reported. Why don't you report it? And be, you know, and really be confident with it. Don't be sort of, you know, sliding into the office or, you know, on the phone and be real scared about what you're doing. You're doing something that could bring world peace. You're doing something that could change the world. And you need to be proud of it because what you're doing is right. There's no doubt about it. And it was funny, I went to the school, the Mechanics School of Arts today, which I know that I think you and Josh and other people have had some little functions and meetings at.
Indeed.
The whole office comes out into the administration area where I'm talking to the secretary. There's like four of them there listening to me, and they start asking me questions about, oh, I heard about that. I heard about this. Oh, wow. I bet you'll get a lot of media here. That's what they were saying.
People would assume
that,
wouldn't they?
I'd be very doubtful of it. And they started the same thing you always hear from people that are interested. I'll say, oh, have you contacted this person? Have you contacted that person? I said, we've sent media releases out on the wire to everyone numerous times, every major event we've had in Sydney. And then this lady goes, well, I heard it on WSFM. They reported it. And I said, well, you're right, they did. And they're the only people that have given us any support. You know, one radio station, really. We got some support from Skid Row Radio Community. We got some support from 2REM down in Albury. We got some support from North Sydney Community Radio. There's been a few other little bits and pieces. George Bullos, a freelance reporter. There's been a few other little bits of, you know, people that we're in contact with from time to time off the record that you know of, Herowood, that are trying to get people interested in these things. We're very close to a breakthrough.
I think we're close.
The other thing I'd say for people to do is ring Talkback Radio. And even if you don't, when you ring them, don't say you're calling about 9/11 Truth. Say you're calling about some other topic like some rugby star.
Or terrorism.
You know, and then get in there and just drop the info bomb. You know, and drop the fact that this guy is coming out from Copenhagen who has found proof and is scientifically undisputed.
Correct. And we've also got Dr. Frank Legg once again is traveling from Perth. You know, let's have a round of applause for Dr. Legg.
Yeah, all the way
working
Perth
for the campaign. Mm. Coming over from Perth for the event. And as a little bit of a backup plan in case something happens with Harrit, he's on a pretty tight schedule. He's arriving in the afternoon of that day. You know what it's been like with plane travel recently with things like the volcano, etc.
Yes.
Who knows what might happen. So we've got a backup there if anything goes wrong. We'll have one of the authors of the nanothermite – or two of the authors of the nanothermite paper there. And we'll also have spare space available in case we fill the venue to allow for an overflow of another 70, 80 people. So – the event's going to be very well organised. There'll be good food there. You know, if anyone hasn't come to one of these events, get along. Even if you know the towers were brought down by controlled demolition, get along and show your support. If it's full with new people, you know, stand outside and chat to the organisers and we can, you know, get together. It's not going to cost you any money. It's a free event. You know, once again, you know, Herowood's designed this excellent flyer that we've got out. You know, I'm throwing up the money for the event. And hopefully we'll get some back with donations and a little bit of merchandise sales and some proceeds from the food. But, you know, we put these things on so people can get together, they can learn, they can and they can put pressure on the press. I mean, obviously the main reason we do these events is to hopefully to get some press. So far, it's been pretty slim. But this man, very important man, supported by his university, hopefully we'll draw a little bit of interest. I know we're getting close. Do you think we're close to a breakthrough, Harrowood?
Look, you'll never be able to see it coming. It'll be always just under the surface. And I think we've been close to a breakthrough for a couple of years. And it's kind of like an earthquake, you know, when it occurs, like, because it will have all these after effects and reverberations, you know, and it could happen at any time because we have insiders. Like, there are people that we know in the media who would be totally, you know, on side with this being exposed, but they just can't move, you know, they're afraid. It's like, you know, people don't want to lose their jobs. That's basically what it comes down to. And that is so sad. You know, I mean, that I know people who are in the media in fairly good positions, but they still won't speak out because even though they're in a good position, it's not good enough. You know what I mean? There's still someone above them that could basically, you know, destroy
them.
But
John, these events really put on by, you know, funding by people as amazing as you and others have, like last time when the Truth Now Tour?
No, the Hard Evidence Tour was the last tour.
The Hard Evidence Tour. I mean, that was a bombshell down in New Zealand. That was a total success.
Massive.
We had, you know, far too much for capacity in terms of people. And I think, you know, we're seeing a slow snowball effect.
And look, we're getting better at organizing these events. You know, I'm actually getting better at it myself. I mean, I've been running these smaller events, but they're starting to, you know, the number of people coming to the film nights, I'm expecting a good turnout this Saturday. And John, you'll be there. And what we've found is that we're getting more people offer to support what we're doing. And that's what we need. We need people to do various jobs. And we also need to be able to just delegate. So we don't, like, the organizer doesn't have to hold all these things in his head. You just say, I delegate this job. You know, you take care of everything to do with, you know, the graphics. You take everything to do with refreshments. You take care of everything to do with publicity. And that's how we need to operate. And we really do need people who've got the skills, the professional people in a given area to step forward and say, look, I'm a graphic designer. I'll do all your flyers for you.
Yeah,
I would
folks,
love
if
that.
If you want to help out with this latest tour, just come to truthnews.com.au or John, what's your website?
Okay, well, at the moment, we're just building a new website. It's not up yet. We'll be using 911oz.com as the primary site at the moment, but there will be a new site coming up, 911truth.org.au, which will be a spin-off of the, you know, the premier representative site, 911truth.org. Janice Matthews is going to be directly involved in that site. The idea of that, we're going to take the best articles over the period from 911oz.com and from Truth Action. .org.au and from other 9/11 blogger, etc., that relate to Australian content. I'm going to lay all that in there, just 9/11 stuff, lay all that information into that site so then we can really represent what it is we've been doing over these last 4 years, because we have done a lot. You know, we've had a lot of interesting people out to the country. We've done a lot of protesting. The amount, like, we just picked up 10,000 flyers today for this event. You know, Harrowood's pumping out flyers that are awakening people every month. You know, and there's people out there now. The We Are Change group is finally starting to pick up pace. There's some really solid people now getting involved that Harrowood can depend on. I've got a great crew there. We had a team of 25 people that worked on the Hard Evidence Tour at the Sydney event, and they were excellent, did a great job, very professional job. The DVDs will be coming out, this 9/11 Science and Society presentation from Dr. Jones. Is going to be phenomenal. It's a really good production. I've seen it, but obviously the 911TV.org crew have been flat out with the press conference that we had with Gage early in the year. Then they moved on to do the deep politics. They've also been involved in this new production with the firefighters for 911 Truth and architects and engineers for 911 Truth, uncovering the myths of 911, which is going to produce this awesome new DVD, which will be the best resource for us as activists that they're working on as well. So they've been really tied up with a lot of things. And like Harrowood's saying, we only really have one professional TV crew for the whole of 9/11 Truth and the whole world. You know, other events just sort of pull things together you know, the best they can. And we've seen some really good results recently coming out of the Treason in America conference. That was just a single camera shot. I think they had a back shot as well that they went to occasionally. But, you know, they kept it reasonably simple, but they still produced a good quality piece. But, you know, you guys know that it's hard to get together a good film team, and we don't really have one in Australia at the moment. It would be great for someone to decide that from now on they're going to be the person that films the events.
Well, look,
and,
folks,
we need people to step forward and say, right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do for this campaign.
We have a mission.
Whether it's the graphic design or filming, or it's it might be I'm going to post all the stuff to YouTube. I'm going to help with the website. I'm going to take it upon myself to contact the architects and engineers in Sydney on the phone.
How do they get in touch with you, mate?
Well, they can get in touch with me. It's easy. They can give me a call on my phone, which you'll find. If you just Google John Bursell phone, you'll find my phone number, but it's 0414878499. Or there's a free call number that will be active soon, which is 1300 153 372, which will redirect to my phone. You can contact me at johnbursell@gmail.com, which is just johnbursill. And if anyone wants to help getting these flyers out, I have 10,000, and I'll mail you flyers to distribute in your area if that's what you like to do.
And if you're in Sydney, we'll be outside the Newtown Centre on Saturday with those flyers.
And you can pick up 50 flyers there. I'll give you 50 flyers on the spot that we had printed today.
From 2 p.m. Now, Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
Now, I just want to say to all our listeners that we are not politically or religiously motivated. Because a lot of people say, why have you got a free number? Why have you got – where's
Damon Crowe. Damon Crowe paid for that, and that's what he's doing for us. He said, right, I'm going to do something for these guys. I've got a business that works with phones, and I'm going to give them a free call number. And that's what Damon Crowe did for us from Mobilizer. What a great guy. And that's how we got that number. How do we get 10,000 flyers? Well, I got $700 out of my pocket and paid for them. How do we get the artwork? Harrowwood did it. You know, I did it last night, worked late and finished it. There you go. How do we get the information on there?
Yeah,
you
know, I missed dinner that night.
And Naomi helped, you know. And we've got all these just individuals working towards a common goal, but we need more. We need more individuals.
So, I just want to make it really clear that the 9/11 Truth Movement, especially in Australia and globally, but I can definitely vouch for Australia, is not religiously or politically motivated. We are from all different religions, from all different political views and outsets. We are just grassroots people that want answers.
Yeah,
and
most people.
We want to stop the wars, you know? We want to bring accountability and justice for the victims of 9/11. Yeah.
Most people, regardless of what type of political economic system they would choose, can still agree that a lie has to be, you know, we can't have people lying. We can't have, you know,
a crime
committed and then not fully investigated, and then governments that just continue to lie about the information. We can't tolerate that. It doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you belong to. You can't tolerate that kind of situation. That's the 9/11 Truth Movement. It unites people.
And we see this this film that's coming that we're watching, Invisible Empire, this weekend on Saturday night. New World Order defined. We see that, you know, just like many other great events in history, you know, from the assassination to JFK, Vietnam, other things that have happened in history, you know, one of the primary driver for the New World Order, or for the One World Government, that's probably the way that I like to explain it, because that's really more accurately what it means, is, you know, driven by 9/11. The fear from 9/11 has allowed so many changes to reduce civil liberties and sovereignty within the world. Based on a lie, you know, just for one example. You can, there's 20, 30, 40 things that you can make clear examples that 9/11 are key to. And the reason that Jason Burmes made that film with Alex Jones is because of their awakening through 9/11. You know, that's
correct.
The reason that film exists. That's the reason that we are aware of these things, that we're taking notice. That's the reason that the world now, that's why Brzezinski is in fear of the world awakening politically. Because we're awakening due to these things. Even though we've got more titillation, we've got more... you know, soap opera and more circuses and more drugs and everything else for the common man, still the common man is wakening.
Yeah, but you know,
because
I think
of things like 9/11 being exposed.
Yeah, and I think the Truth Movement has done such a fantastic job in terms of the amount of money and hard labor that they have put in, literally pouring their own souls and heart into it and flooding the internet with information and really getting top-notch people. It wasn't like, you know, some of the, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Well, yeah, look, you know, yeah, I might be interested in the fake moon hoax and all this stuff, but it doesn't have the expertise that 9/11, it's 9/11, it doesn't even come close. The 9/11 truth movement doesn't even come close in terms of, well, it goes a lot, just so much further in terms of credibility than any other conspiracy theory that people like to banish you under as soon as you mention it. I mean, you have literally thousands of architects, engineers, physicists that have put all of, you know, their hard, well, all of their name on the line to expose this lie.
That's why we see things like, if you go to 911oz.com at the moment, you'll see an article up there by Naomi Breeze, where she's actually, I'm just changing the title of that, and I'll be posting that on 911 Blogger tomorrow. I'm going to call it "9/11 Heroine Confronts 9/11 Hero." You know, like something like that, because that's really what it was. Naomi went to an event, and I just found out off my wife that this fellow's been speaking at Station One in the city, Dan Daly, who's a State Department employee. Now, Blackwater are also State Department employees.
That's
interesting. But anyway, that's another story.
So he's a former fireman. He's now a State Department employee.
He's a professional speaker on behalf of the State Department that travels the world telling the official story of 9/11 and his involvement in it. Now, it was the last truck there, but he was on the scene at the time, and he was involved in the cleanup, and he's now retired from that job. He was actually promoted to a chief, I think, during the disaster cleanup. But anyway, he's been going around the world telling his story, and wouldn't you know it, a pretty young woman by the name of Naomi stands up in the audience and asks him a question, during his presentation. Do you support the victims' families' call for a new investigation in light of the new evidence that shows that the towers were brought down by a controlled demolition? Just like that. And he was so upset, angry. Well, let's just put it bluntly. He was pissed off that he swore in a church to start with. And he refused to answer any of his questions, accused her of being a no-planer. And then the parish priest asked her why she wasn't having babies and not worrying about such things. You know, so she caused quite a stir at this event. And anyone that wants to read a really good story about someone that's got the balls, the guts, the determination to stand up and speak truth to power, read the story of Naomi. It's up on the front page of 9/11 Oz.
You know, it's interesting, isn't it? I would bet you a fair proportion of the people in the audience already knew about the theories about the buildings being blown up. But again, it's the crowd mentality. It's the emperor's new clothes, you know, phenomenon. People just don't talk about it because they don't think it's legitimate to talk about it. And even when that one person stands up, they don't get the support, you know. It's just really hard when you're the one person who stands up. Yeah, it's very different when there's a larger group, and then you can get that momentum and you can create a snowball effect. But when you're that lone person standing up, you know, it's like one of those court scenes. You know,
in a way, because she's well-spoken, you know, and she's nice looking. She doesn't look like some, unwashed feral truther, as we might imagine from some things that people write on the internet.
Yeah.
Or she's not some geek. She's a normal person, you know. It's actually, sometimes it can be very powerful on her own. And because she stuck to her guns, sat there through the rest of the lecture, and then approached Dan Daly at the end of the event, and he refused to speak to her. He refused to ask a simple question at the end of the lecture of how many buildings collapsed on 9/11. He wouldn't even answer that question because he doesn't want to alert the crowd to Building 7. Now, it's terrible. Yeah, it's very difficult to do these things.
But why? What's his deal? Like,
well, his deal is he's paid by the State Department to tell the official story.
Yeah, we know the State Department.
He was there while Building 7, firefighter. The firefighters in New York are aware that Building 7 was a demolition. Any of them that were there are aware of that. Do you think that buildings can turn to dust at free fall speed? But they can't speak. They can't speak about things that happen on the job. It's against their job descriptions rules. It's against the way that the fire brigade talks. I know that for a fact. You know,
also,
I'd
just like to clarify
you
that
can't talk about fire brigade business.
I'd just like to clarify, John, that the State Department issued a statement which has been one of the strongest propaganda statements about 9/11, which you'll find if you Google State Department 9/11. They've had this on their website for years, and it basically discounts all of the so-called conspiracy theories with one-liner or very short, statements saying such and such is impossible. You know, it's been proven that the buildings collapsed due to fire. You know, and this propaganda essentially is run by the State Department, so they are very much part of propping up the completely distorted picture of what happened on that day. So the fact that this man is actually employed by them, well, it explains his behaviour to a T.
John, absolutely. There's an interesting website link I just sent out to my list today. And if you wish to get a regular update on what's going on in 9/11 Truth World, send me an email at johnbursell@gmail.com and I'll put you on my list. America.gov. If anyone's on the internet now, go to America.gov, go to International Relations at America.gov. Then if you move down the page, or actually if you go to Peace and Security in the drop-down menu off International Relations, and you cruise on down the page there, you'll find all peace and security features a fair way down, but not too far, and then you'll see conspiracy theories and misinformation. This is what the American government's putting out. Then we go to September 11. We can grab – it's not a very good website, actually. Dramatic and polarizing events often give rise to conspiracy theories, and the September 11 attacks were the most dramatic terrorist attacks in history. Nonsense about them abounds, especially on the popular video Loose Change. The September 11 conspiracy theories, for an overview, there was no controlled demolition of the World Trade Center towers. Instead,
full stop.
Okay, and it just goes on and on. And you want to see what it says about JFK? It's a classic, because you can actually page through all the different health, all outer space, military, all these different things, economic. It's a laugh. You'd laugh about the economic one. U.S. domestic, USA and Islam, Latin America. It's got all these other conspiracy theories there, including JFK. If you get there and have a look, and it's got the debunking 9/11 conspiracy theories. I bet you that's the popular mechanics.
Can I just interject for 1 minute? The House Committee on Assassinations founded in 1979, and this is the closest thing that we ever got to a real investigation of the Kennedy assassination, which couldn't complete because they weren't given the top secret documents. They were blocked every step of the way. Nonetheless, they concluded that there was a high probability of a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. That was the closest thing we ever got to a new investigation run by people in the government, run by people who were totally above board. And now they still talk about the JFK conspiracy theories as if it's a lot of nonsense made up by people, you know, with tinfoil hats on. This is absurd. It's just a factually wrong. It's a lie. It's a complete distortion and twisting of facts simply because they are the government, or, you know, they are the media. They have the power to put this information into prominent places like websites where you would go to if you, you know, wanted to get the information from a trusted source, you might go there. But we also have Google. We can go to Google, and I guarantee you, if you put 9/11 into Google, you won't get the State Department coming up at the top of Google's rankings. I wonder why that is. The State Department website on 9/11 doesn't even come up on the first page of the Google search engine search on 9/11. But you know what does come up on the first page? WTC.net? Well, I'll do it right now. I'll do it right now as we speak.
Do that, I'll just explain. I mean, we've talked about this before on the show, but, you know, Google has an algorithm that basically counts the amount of links that come into a page. They call it's called the type of importance algorithm. How important is a website to a keyword? So, you know, yeah, you might get information on Fox News and stuff, but there is no real importance. They just choose what they want. Google chooses democratically what people point to information. So if people are talking about 9/11 and then they link to a certain article, and then if hundreds of people do that, that article becomes more important. So Google ranks that higher on those keywords. So what comes up, Herewood?
Well, this is quite amazing, and this just changes a lot. So what we see today is we always see Wikipedia in number one. Now, Wikipedia typically is in number one for general searches on any topic. So Wikipedia is good in some ways, but totally unreliable on controversial issues. Anyway, I can see the number one place to Wikipedia. At least Wikipedia does also offer you links to the 9/11 conspiracy theories. If you go to September 11 attacks on Wikipedia, you will actually be linked to more information. So I'm not totally against Wikipedia there. But guess what we have in position two? Loose Change, 9/11, An American Coup, a new film by Dylan Avery. That is in position number two, ladies and gentlemen.
Brilliant.
Guess what is in position number three on Google? Journal of 9/11 Studies.
Wow. Yeah. How good's that?
I mean, position two and three, the top, you know, the best film that was made on 9/11 and Journal of 9/11 Studies, the best scientific research site on 9/11. And guess what is on page one in about position number six? 9/11 Oz, because I'm searching from Australia and it does give preference to Australian sites when you're searching from Australia. In position number six on the same page, 9/11 Oz, Australian 9/11 Truth Movement. So, you know, this little site that we created here in Australia is rated above anything else on the topic in Australia. You know, we're way ahead of anything, okay? Now, what does that say? Well, it says that we have the relevant information.
Yeah,
that's right, exactly. And people can figure this stuff out, like the American.gov site. As you can see, you can go and have a good laugh there. This is just gives people an excuse to go back to sleep. That's what it's all about. The propaganda is not really convincing anyone. It's simply allowing people to give themselves an excuse to go back to sleep. That's really what it's all about. But every day, like I was saying today, when I went to the Mechanics School of Arts, you know, they were great. They were interested. They wanted to come. They wanted flyers. You know, this is the sort of reaction you get from the people in academic situations if they're not feeling like that they're going to lose their job over it, because they're not putting it on. You know, they're not the ones out there speaking. They're just allowing you to spend your money at their venue. But you know, and I just think that's a great great sign of the times. You know, and I think the truth about 9/11 is getting out there much quicker and much better than what happened with John F. Kennedy because of the internet. People are still confused about the JFK assassinations. You know, the people that have looked into it deeply, like myself, it's pretty clear. It's symbiosis, similar to 9/11. It's a lot of interests that wanted to see Kennedy gone. You know, and using the CIA because it's the you know, the vessel or the you know, it's got the fingers everywhere so that it can do the job. You know, but in the end, it can only happen when you have support from a lot of different entities. And you know, the looming financial crisis back in 2001 and the fact that America was the only preeminent superpower and it needed to build its empire, it was going to miss its opportunity because China and India is on the rise. You know, this is why September 11 happened, you know, and a lot of people wanted it to happen and a lot of people don't want people to know about it, but you're only, what, 8-9 years down the road, and I tell you, a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, a lot.
Hey, More than half of the people know about it.
I mean, to go back to what you were saying here about, you know, people fearing for their jobs in the media. I don't buy that. I think people are just cowards, honestly. I mean, I've worked at Channel 9 for years doing graphic design and animation. I'm always wearing my 9/11 Truth shirt around. I've got my car's got stickers all over it. 9/11 Truth. 9/11 was an inside job. Nothing. Channel 9 put a piece on the news, on the midday news about the 9/11 Truth Movement about 3 or 4 months ago. And I've got a feeling it's because every day they see my stickers on my car, you know, and they sort of did it. It was just some quick piece, but I was really blown away that was there. But you know, people are just interested when they talk to me about it. Some people take the piss. But,
well, I've heard that Dr. Stephen Wan hasn't been asked back since he did his interview with me on Visibility 9/11. So I don't know if that's had an effect.
Right. Yeah. Ask back where, John?
To Channel 9.
Okay, right. So he's been on Channel 9 before?
Yeah, he was a regular sort of guest on the morning program.
Oh, really? Okay. That is interesting.
Yeah, but his work there has been rolled back. But, you know, it might just be a coincidence, but who knows? He didn't really say anything particular. He's just got questions. He's a bit like Charlie Sheen. Just got a lot of questions.
Look, some people higher up the chain, when they step out on this, will take a bullet, okay?
Yeah, you know, I'm not on air.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky that we're not at that level and we can get away with what we're doing. I think, John, you're in the similar position. But there are people...
Well, I've been close to taking a bullet. Luckily that I'd surrounded myself by people that were aware what I was doing wasn't insane, because obviously, if someone had come to the decision that a licensed aircraft maintenance engineer working on passenger aircraft was insane, they probably would have liked to sack me, I'd imagine. But thank God they don't think I'm insane.
Yeah. And look, it's a shame that this has to happen to certain people. I mean, as we saw, Stephen Jones did have to leave his job. We saw Kevin Ryan actually sacked. We've seen various people find it very difficult to continue in a normal kind of career sense. Now, even Dylan Avery, I'm actually a friend of Dylan Avery on Facebook, and he's been talking about his difficulties. He's not doing that well, folks. Like, he says he's catching the bus and, you know, looking for work. It's not even, you know, like, it's hard when you're actually bucking the system. Now, Charlie Sheen seems to have done okay. I did report last show that he'd quit, but then I heard today that he's flip-flopped and he's now back on that show for another couple of seasons. Has anyone else heard that? That's what I heard today, that Charlie Sheen is going to be on television for a while yet.
Well, for $2 million an episode or whatever it is, and the kid's getting, you know, $250,000 an episode. Don't think you'll be letting that cash car loose.
No, indeed. And I mean,
he has been very careful, buddy. You know, he has questions. You know, so right. You know, he's been very careful about it. Yeah, but someone like Jesse Ventura, say for instance, that's really, you know, his own sort of entity. I suppose he has enough fame where he doesn't need to, do the right thing by anyone or scratch the right back or whatever you might want to say. With this book of his, can't get a review. And if you haven't read 9/11 conspiracy theories, I'm just trying to think of the title again. It's American Conspiracies, Dirty Little Lies That They Don't Want You to Know, something like that. But it's an absolutely excellent book. That's a very easy to read. It doesn't go into too much detail for someone that just wants to skim over the history of conspiracies in America. It's just awesome book, and that's been in the top 10 for months now, you know, in the New York Times bestseller list, but it hasn't even got a review, you know, so we can win regardless. It's just a matter of being prepared to be honorable.
Excellent.
And not be scared, you know.
Excellent. Well, we've got to wind up the show in a minute, John.
Can we talk about one more event?
Yeah, squeeze it in. Please squeeze it in. Yeah.
Tomorrow morning we're on Saturday, we'll be tomorrow morning by the time this comes out. But on Saturday morning, as part of the Writers' Festival, there's a very interesting event on where there's a couple of people. I think it's David Marr, who's the ex man from the ABC's Media Watch, and also there's Mike Carlton and a couple of other people that are considered to be edgy, journalists as such. Now, they're actually running an event that's perfect for anyone that's interested in improving the press freedom and the public's right to know. It's actually called Press Freedom and the Public's Right to Know. David Marr and Davies, Michael McKinnon and Mike Carlton. It's on Saturday, the 22nd of May, between 10 and 11 p.m., and it's at the Sydney Dance Company, Studio 2 of 3, Pier 4-5, Hickerson Road, Walsh Bay. You can get the details if you go to the Sydney Writers Festival website, and you'll be able to find the details there. And that's going to be a great event. There's quite a few people are going along. We're just hoping to ask a question. And I'd advise people, if you ever get a chance to ask a question at these events, don't go into some technical detail, because these people aren't, you know, they're journalists. They're not scientists. Just ask them a question. Why is it that we can't even have a discussion?
Yeah, how about this?
9/11?
How about this? Based on our little exercise that we did with Google, how about you say this? Why is it that when I search on Google about 9/11, I get all these sites that come up that talk about how the buildings were demolished with controlled demolition, but I've never heard that on the media? Please explain. Why does Google give me this information, and Google being the best search engine that we've got, And why doesn't the media...
For relevant information.
For relevant, and why doesn't the media ever report on this? Please explain.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think the question that the article that you're posting on 9/11 Blogger soon, what was that? Can you repeat that question? Because it was very well put.
The question that Naomi brought up. I can actually find that because I'm just working on that now. Where are we?
It was very well constructed.
It was. We can see what she asked here. if I can get it up. Sorry, should have been. You've got me on the hop here, Josh. No, anyway, no, I'll just from what I from memory it was. You know, do you support the victims' families?
Yeah, so they're
calling for a new investigation based on the evidence, the new evidence that's been found that demonstrates the buildings were brought down by a controlled demolition or something to that effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see what she said exactly because it's here. Okay, me. Do you support the victims' families who are demanding a new independent investigation of the events of September 11 based on the new scientific evidence that has come to light concerning controlled demolition and the presence of explosive thermite in the dust samples?
Oh, I mean, it's just brilliant. It's covering every single base that they attack you on. And I think people should write that quote down and just use that as a base question. It's fantastic.
It Excellent is a great idea. Question. And then if we get an answer, you can say, do you know that the lead author of the 9-person scientific group that did this paper on this uncontested paper is going to be here in July? Are you going to report on it? No, and that would be a killer. And I think you're dead right. I think that's what we're going to do. If the when the group turns up, we'll have a talk. And I think whoever gets the chance to ask the question will be asking something along those lines. But I think also the question of just why is it not allowed to be discussed? Why isn't anyone talking about it when it's the most popular thing going? Why does WSFM do an interview with Richard Gage and they're still getting thank yous about it today? They got more thank yous than they ever got for anything. You know, why is that, that no one's talking about it when it's so popular and it's so real, it's so accurate, yeah, it's so, yeah. you know, tangible?
Well, what's fishy for me is that, you know, in a market sense, if you have a product that rates well, you go with it, whatever it is. And people will constantly use that in television saying, oh, look, we have a show. And you just think, look at this disgusting show. It's just full of murder and mayhem. And what do the execs say? It rates. We're going to put it on.
Well, why is John's back on with his own footy show, even though he abuses women, he's a gangbanger. Why is he back on? Because he's popular, you know?
Yeah, it rates well. So they stick it on TV. And
like
so
that Kyle that did that, you know, thing about that rape girl and just showed no regard for her, and he got back on too because he's popular.
Well, yeah,
they got no ethics or morals. There's nothing, none of that at the they're not worried about offending victims' families of 9/11. That's not why they're not putting it on.
No, so there's something fishy. There's something fishy going on. Why aren't they talking about it?
Absolutely.
No idea. Anyway, we might get a chance to ask these people. Now, isn't that a classic, the name of that event about censorship and the people's right to know in the media? You know,
brilliant.
They're asking for it, aren't they?
But you know what, folks? I want someone out there to organise a flash mob that just get up and have about 20 people in the audience that just keep, when they ignore you, have someone else stand up and ask a similar question and just keep bombarding them with these questions. And that's, I mean, I've seen it done in the States and it's just brilliant to watch. It's great viewing on YouTube and I really encourage you,
great idea.
You to get out there and do that.
Last couple of announcements. We've added a Facebook like to Truth News. So when you get our story this week, when you go to the site, click on the like button because that's a really important new thing. Facebook is now the sine qua non of internet buzz themes, buzzwords.
Yes.
So, yes. Anyway, on that note, we're going to have to say goodnight. Remember to just let the world know what you think. Don't hide behind a bushel. Cheers, folks.
And leave a comment. Leave a comment, too.
Yeah, leave a comment. Leave a comment. As many as you like. We like it. Even if it's on the chemtrails. Look, we do get a bit tired of it, but, you know, if that's what you want to talk about chemtrails. Okay.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Good night from Truth News Australia.
Till next week.